You're listening to Pod 4 Ham, a podcast that's all about the musical Hamilton, taking it one track at a time. Every episode features different groups of interesting people talking about a single track from the original Broadway cast recording of Hamilton. Visit us online at pod4ham, that's the numeral 4, .com. Follow us on Twitter at pod4ham, or you can visit The Incomparable at theincomparable.com.
So despondent, I have taken over writing all his correspondence. Congress writes, George attacked the British forces. I shoot back, we have resorted to eating our horses.
Welcome everyone to yet another interlude of Pod 4 Ham. This time we're here talking about Stay Alive, in which Hamilton is serving well as Washington's right-hand man, but is still frustrated by the fact that George Washington keeps sending out people not as cool or awesome as he is to go out and get shot at. I'm Andy Anatko, and let me introduce the rest of the folks who are going to be talking about Stay Alive. Scott Canaster, how are you doing today, Scott?
Doing great, Andy. How are you?
Awesome. Marco Savick, how are you doing?
Doing well.
Excellent. Casey Barber is standing by from a great state that we'll save for a surprise.
Greetings from the Garden State.
There you go. And, of course, Ashley Clark Thompson.
Hello. How are you doing?
Hanging in, hanging on. Today's been a very pleasant day of listening to the same track over and over and over again. This has been sort of unusual because I don't let's do another comparing of notes as Hamilton fans. I'm a Catholic boy, so I'm really good at feeling guilty about things that maybe I shouldn't feel guilty about. So I feel guilty about the fact that I don't listen to every one of these like interstitial, although important and well sung songs. I only get to hear it when they come up at random on shuffle play, or if I'm actually listening to the entire thing start to finish. Let's go around the horn and see if we have the same sort of reaction to the soundtrack. Scott, do you tend to listen to this thing as a whole, and do you listen to even the stuff that only lasts about a minute or two?
I go back and forth between listens all the way through and I admit I have a playlist of songs that I feel like I have a reasonable shot at singing. And so in my car by myself, of course. And so I have a few songs on that playlist. If I feel the need to sing as I sit in my hellish commute, and otherwise I do like to listen in order from the top, but I have to admit that I get sidetracked a lot. Maybe I'll listen to Act One and a few songs of Act Two, and then something else will happen. I have to listen to an awesome Andy Anatko podcast, let's say, so I'll abandon my listen through. But I do have the songs I like to sing. There's a thing called Hamiltunes, by the way, which is a real thing where people get together and do the whole show karaoke style. And there was just one Tuesday night in San Francisco, about 200 people showed up, coming soon to a city near you. So that's I practice for those, I guess.
How many Hamiltons show up versus how many Burrs? and are they all outnumbered by King George's?
This is really nerdy because they have a sign-up sheet. They put out
There isn't an app? You're telling me in San Francisco there isn't an app for this?
I know. That's just shameful, isn't it? Just you wait.
There you go. Marco, are you a baritone? Can you sing along with any of these things?
I try to sing along. I can't do very well. But
you have a good tenor. Like George Washington is a good baritone role. That's the one cookie that got thrown to us baritone. So to baritones like me.
Yeah, I just have no tone control. So it's all just monotone all the way. But that's fine for my car. But I typically like listening to the soundtrack through if I'm driving. When I'm out running, in which case I have a modified playlist of just the thumping songs like Stay Alive, but also some that you wouldn't think of, like Satisfied are in there too.
Yeah, that's sort of a problem. Like there are some great songs for the Skylar Sisters that the guys have a problem singing, but there are only three female lead songs in this for women who want to sing along. So how do you handle that?
For me, it doesn't affect me much because I sing badly any song. Whether it's male or female role. So no, the lack of women-led songs doesn't really deter me from just singing my heart out in the car, in the shower, on the elliptical machine, at my desk, under my breath, whatever the case may be.
And do you listen to all the songs or just cherry pick the hits?
I think I would consider myself a purist. I try to listen to the whole cast recording in order if I can. If I know I have limited time, then I'll just kind of like go through the big numbers just to get me jazzed up. And if I need motivation, I go to Nonstop. And when he says the other 51, I'm like, okay, I got this.
And Casey, like, what's your style here?
I'm with Ashley. I feel the need to listen to it from start to finish without skipping. Or if I know where I left off, I will start up again there on my next run. I see that we are all Hamilton runners, which is kind of good.
Hamilton runners. Before we start talking about, let's do a quick synopsis of this thing. This part of the story, Stay Alive, it takes place right after Wait For It. So we've basically been listening to Aaron Burr have his big sort of soliloquy where he's saying he's how amazed he is that Hamilton's been making so much progress and having so much success. And he's impressed and a little bit envious. He's having that Antonio Salieri moment where he can see how much drive and determination that Hamilton has and recognizes that he's the sort of guy he wants to wait and hang back and let things happen around him. And now we go here into Stay Alive, which is kind of a little bit of a flashback back into some badly happening moments during the Revolutionary War. Casey, how did you might have related to this a little bit more intensely than the rest of us related to Stay Alive.
I can definitely see why people consider this a skip over song, and it didn't grab me, you know, the first, whatever, 10 times I listened to the soundtrack. But I live in New Jersey, northern New Jersey to be specific. And there is a town on the other side of the George Washington Bridge from Washington Heights, which is called Fort Lee. And I've been living here for 15 years and driving around Fort Lee. Lo and behold, the town is named for Charles Lee, who we saw as one of these semi-comic relief characters.
I think we can all join in on this, where Hamilton, instead of me, he promotes Charles Lee, makes him second in command. Then Lee's next line is, "I'm a general." Which maybe is not very respectful. I don't know. I don't know much about Charles Lee.
Well, now I know more than I've ever imagined I would know about Charles Lee in my lifetime, because I was like, oh my God, they named a town after Charles Lee. But it turns out that he was hanging out with Washington for most of 1776 during all the major battles. And it's not that he was inexperienced. It's just that he was a jerk and nobody liked him.
I wish we could say the same thing about Hamilton and Burr.
Right? So, again, this is Lin-Manuel, like, compressing and playing with history. But it's kind of amazing that Charles Lee is a part of my everyday life, and he has been, and I never knew it till now.
There's a lot of those little time bombs, I think, that are hiding in street names and town names that, oh, look, here's a guy in Revolutionary or Civil War dress that's looking out into the horizon. Okay, I bet he did something interesting to be commemorated by. But then you find out that, yeah, he did technically save the lives of 8 pioneers by killing a lot of non-white people who wanted to live, who were already living in the place where those 8 people wanted to move into. So maybe you should, you don't want to dig too deep into family history sometimes, maybe.
Well, Charles Lee didn't have a family as much as he had his beloved dogs, who he took with him everywhere, including to the Battle of Monmouth.
So the lyrics of this song, I've got them in front of me right here, where Lee is the person that Washington basically put into the front of battle instead of Hamilton, whom he's keeping close because he is much more effective for the cause, writing letters and strategizing. And Lee to, I don't know if we got the explicit tag on this podcast, but he Hamilton says that he spit the bed at the Battle of Monmouth. and then after he and Lee decided to retreat instead of attack, going against Washington's direct orders. And then when in the song, when Washington dismisses him, Lee starts talking trash about Washington as a commander, which does not make Hamilton very, very happy at all. Marco, this really seems like the sort of place where Hamilton is a little ember and here's a big pile of gasoline being thrown right on top of him. If there's a place for him to be, for him being a jerk to really pay off for him, this is it.
Yeah, I think that's definitely what happens, especially as this leads into the duel that happens next. I think, especially with Hamilton being passed over, and if you read in the Genius Notes, there's this good line about how Washington chose Charles Lee, who passed it, and then he gave it to Lafayette, and then Charles Lee wanted it back, and so he gave it to him, but then he didn't want it, so he gave it back to Lafayette, and it was like this back and forth of just like petulance of like, I want it, but I don't. And so
classic
you can see
Charles
like,
Lee, man.
Charles, like, damn it. Always Charles.
From what we know of Hamilton, you can see how like he just would not put up with any of that.
While we're destroying Charles Lee, I wanted to point out, I think he gets an awesome rap in the middle of this song when he starts, Washington cannot be left alone to his devices. It's really crisp. It has no stops. And it has one of my favorite semi-hidden rhymes in the show, which is when he rhymes Turnin' with Mount Vernon. Love that one.
Can you wrap this one with a single breath?
Not on this podcast. Yes, I think so.
Do you sign up for Charles Lee and Hamilton's?
No, somebody else. I actually went for it, but it was the way they do it, by the way, is per role, per song. Ah. So one person doesn't get to be Hamilton, Jefferson, all night.
Well, who could? It's like, we're going to take a little bit of a break from talking about the song itself, because I am fascinated by this thing. Now, is it sort of like a fun sort of Sound of Music sing-along, or do people come to combat?
It's totally for fun.
Okay.
There's no requirement that you have any singing ability whatsoever. People sign up for parts and come up to the front and sing into microphones, but the whole audience is singing along anyway. So it's pretty much a free for all. And I think it started in LA. There was one in San Francisco this week. I found out about it on Facebook. There are groups with the name Hamiltoons in them, and it's spreading. The LA group is actually putting together a kit that includes the spreadsheet and the how-to, and pretty soon you'll be able to buy it at your local drugstore, I guess. But it's just a lot of fun to not worry about how well you can sing. Maybe the one in LA was a little more, I'm going to show you how good I am, but I feel like it's all in fun.
It's fun that you singled out that block, Washington. I feel as though for me to try to do rap is like my trying to do a French accent. You will say, oh, isn't that darling that he tried? But it's really embarrassing. The like, Washington cannot be left alone to his devices, indecisive from crisis to crisis. The best he can do for the revolution is turn and go back to planting tobacco in Mount Vernon. And it really is this bullet sort of delivery. There's so many different kinds of delivery, and all these different roles and all these different songs. The ones that aren't melodic, the ones that are more like what we associate with rap. But this is you hear this sort of fluttery sort of delivery that Lee is giving in these previous lines. But when he's pissed off, he's really just angry about this whole thing.
He spits it.
That's
he
when spits he's the he, exactly. He's just shouting and spitting this sort of thing
like that.
Is there a real user interface to rap that we're sort of getting introduced to here? Anybody thinks?
That's a great question, because my level of rap expertise is much lower than my level of history expertise, for example.
I listen to the Sugar Hill Gang. I could still say I can still do some of their songs from start to finish, but it ended in the mid 80s for me.
Well, it's been mentioned in quite a few interviews that they've picked different rappers' styles to represent different characters. So, yeah, I would say that we're getting sort of an overall picture of the depth and breadth of rap technique. That's probably not what you would really call it, but that's what I'm calling it. From seeing the way everyone delivers each stanza in line, depending on which character they're playing.
But yes, but I think the calling it the hip hop musical, like that's the shorthand for people who haven't heard or seen it, is really shortchanging all the many, many musical styles in the show. I think it owes almost as much to traditional Broadway music, show music, as it does to hip hop. Well, maybe not almost as much. It owes a lot to traditional Broadway show tunes. There are numbers that have nothing to do with hip hop, like some of Jefferson's songs, like his first song, What Did I Miss? He's not rapping in that song. Some of Burr's numbers, like Wait For It and Dear Theodosia. So there's a lot of influences other than hip hop. I think Lin Miranda thought of Hamilton and all these guys as hip hop guys, as rappers, especially Hamilton, who, like he says, he wrote his way out. He was a writer, and that's how he advanced his circumstance. But there are many, many musical styles going on in this show. Of course, King George and his pop songs.
Right. And if you think of Stay Alive, if you were going to put this in sort of other visual terms than theater, this is a very explicatory song. If this were in a movie, this would be the montage moment where they show everything going wrong during the war.
Yes.
For me, it really, I think, shows the depth of hip hop and rap. Because when, you know, I'm trying to describe it to people and I do use the shorthand, oh, it's this hip hop musical. You know, for some folks, that's going to be a turnoff because of maybe the hip hop that they're familiar with or what they hear on the radio, but they're not familiar with the depth of the genre and that it can be so many things. And so when you see some of this great wordplay, like we see in this song, you know, with the Turnin' and the Mount Vernon, and then, you know, one of my favorite, you know, rhymes is about, you know, George attacked the British forces. I shoot back. We have resorted to eating our horses, you know. And I think it shows that hip hop can be a little bit of everything and that it does take true masters of words to make raps flow and work just like any other song.
That's a great point. I unfortunately haven't listened to much hip hop and don't know much about it, but to me, it reminds me of when I was a kid and comic books started to be taken seriously because someone separated the idea that comic books were for kids, separated the content from the form. Okay, so hip hop is a way to tell stories in music. And this show demonstrates that you can tell a story that has nothing to do with the usual content of hip hop by using hip hop. It separates the content from the form, just like we figured out that pictures and words in comic books, I mean, maybe this is a trivial comparison, but it's how I think of it because it's something I know, that you can tell great stories with pictures and words. And in fact, humans have been doing that for thousands of years. You don't have to just tell kids stories. And hip hop doesn't just have to be about the traditional things it's about. It can be about, in this case, American history and all the things that happened to Hamilton and the founding fathers.
I just adore how these words just fit together. When I was listening to it, I was maybe it's because I've been rereading and rereading Stephen Sondheim's two big books on of lyrics and all of his shows and also the stories behind how he put those together. It really just felt familiar that there's just such Lin-Manuel Miranda just must love puzzles the same way that that Sondheim does, because these words just fit together so beautifully and so unexpectedly. And it's like watching a skateboarder doing a half bowl, and you think they're about to eat it, but it was just they were just setting themselves up for the next really wonderful flip and going back down. And I was so pleased to hear that he and Sondheim were in close contact. That I don't know if Sondheim has actually a credit in this or whether he was just sort of a mentor to or just a friend to Miranda when he was writing this, but it's easy to see that this is a Lin-Manuel Miranda knew why Sondheim was such a good lyricist.
I think Sondheim should come up with a mixtape.
I would love to see an actual collaboration, though, with him. And it was a little bit sad seeing him in this, I think it was the recent HBO documentary, where he was talking about why he hasn't really written a whole lot. And it's because he feels as though he's just done so much that there's nothing left, nothing new for him to do now that really intrigues him. And boy, wouldn't it be great to hook him up with a creator like Lin-Manuel Miranda and just have him, oh, looks like I had another musical left to me after all.
That would be amazing.
I want to make sure that we talk about some of the content of this, of Stay Alive. It's another sort of a bridge song. It's not as short as some of the others, but it's there to sort of patch together a lot of what's gone before and set up the songs that are to come, where Hamilton is really, really frustrated by this turn of events, that Washington is putting people into field that he doesn't feel are as capable as Hamilton himself would be if he were in that position. Not only that, when Lee starts trash talking Washington, who remains, even when he wasn't the founder of our country, remains that person who's cast in marble, saying, no, we're not going to start a beef. We're not going to put our efforts in a place that's not going to be productive. And then Hamilton sort of goes behind his back and agrees with Lawrence to have Lawrence be the aggressor against Lee and fight a duel and sort of foreshadow what we're all that pistol that got put on the table in Act One of this, that we know that how this is all going to end. So the first time we see a really big duel, we're kind of taken aback by this. What was your impression about this when you first were hearing about this this song?
Well, for me, it really brought back the severity of war. You know, that war truly is just it's very horrific, and what they were going through was terrible. Because I think we're coming down off of, you know, the Winter's Ball and Satisfied, and you know, kind of, I don't want to say lighter songs, but it's not centered around battle. And so now we're really seeing the nitty gritty of what it is. And then it's leading up to this duel. So for me, it helped establish how high the stakes were, that these men have little else, but they have their honor and their pride. And so for Lee to kind of run his mouth, you know, essentially it's like, I get why these young men would really be upset about that, where this, it just seemed like it set up the environment where, well, we got a duel because that's the only way that we're going to settle this. Not saying it was right, but you know, it just kind of made it real, because I went into Hamilton not really understanding, like, well, why do we need to duel? That seems silly, you know, yeah. But it kind of really establishes the stakes.
Yeah, that's the idea of settling this, what seems to be a really stupid beef, by dueling. It's still baffling. Marco, did you have the same sort of feelings?
Yeah, I can't imagine a world where dueling existed, especially as it comes up later in the production. But it just seems like such an extreme way to handle a situation like this. Things that kind of is highlighted in the song is just how extreme they have to be in these circumstances. Like Ashley, you talked about the horror of war. The other thing is how scrappy they have to be. And maybe the dueling is coming out of that, because the whole issue is Charles Lee isn't being scrappy. There's the line when Washington is saying, what are you doing, Lee? Get back on your feet. And it's that attitude is what sort of propelled them to freedom.
It's classic storytelling, where you have something that's going to happen to your hero happen to a lesser character first. It happens to a red shirt, so that you can sort of see later on, you know, what the roadmap is going to be when we're having the same scene playing out, only it's going to have emotional real heft for us. And I think part of this, the next song after this is 10 Duel Commandments, in which we go step by step by step. Here are the social rules of a duel. And it only makes it kind of more horrifying that this is not two hot-headed people just grabbing their coats and running out in the streets and turning 10 steps to turn in fire, there is an elegance and a formality to it and several exit points where if you just don't act like idiots, you can just simply shake hands. Everyone retains their honor and nobody gets shot and no one has a musical written about them.
It reminds me a little bit, and this is going to be a weird comparison, but the television show The Wire, in that, you know, you had these characters like Omar, and I don't know how familiar, I don't know what the Venn diagram of Hamilton fans and The Wire fans, what that looks like, but you had a character named Omar who would shoot and kill drug dealers, but wouldn't mess with civilians. He would shoot them or steal like their drugs and their money, whatever. And he talks a lot about having a code, you know? And I think for these men, as ridiculous as dueling seems, they had a code for it, you know? So it's very interesting that depending on what environment you're in, there's a set of rules and norms and a code that everybody just kind of understands and follows.
For me, this song is interesting as a bridge coming off what is a very emotional, traditional song and how they ease into that and the sort of musical themes they use to build, especially with the little piano intro that then comes back later and later and later in the show. And even going into Ten Dual Commandments, how that all, it creates sort of this musical theme that's going to be repeated. And I find that really interesting about it.
Yeah, there's almost no insignificant, they're short songs, but there are no insignificant ones. We're probably close to the end of our time here, so let's go around the horn and make sure that we've dotted every I, crossed every T, and set up everything we needed to set up before we get into the next one. Scott, is there anything else you wanted to say about Stay Alive?
Well, I should say, since I was talking about references and musical styles other than hip-hop in the show, probably one of the strangest or farthest afield references is when Hamilton quotes Sing a Song of Sixpence in talking about the fact that the local merchants only take British money. So we have a nursery rhyme quoted in this song in Hamilton.
Actually, this is it's looking at the lyrics and looking at everything else here, again, on the genius.com page about this. I'm reminded that it's kind of interesting that Eliza and Angelica start as sort of like sirens off the shore singing Stay Alive. And then that's when Hamilton comes in. It's sort of an interesting way to start this off, given that they don't play a role in the rest of the song, at least not directly.
Yeah. And after the first Stay Alive, there's a bullet fired, a gun fired. And if I remember correctly, there's actually an actor who plays the bullet, which is the same way it happens in the final duel. A gunshot fires. The actor playing the bullet makes her way across the stage and misses Hamilton. And I think it's the same actor.
I think it is.
Plays the fatal bullet.
Is it that explicit?
She's on Instagram as hashtag the bullet.
Oh, that's
Ariana DeBose.
Is Ariana DeBose, yeah.
Is it really that explicit on stage? Not she's dressed in a giant like Mario Brothers bullet costume or anything like that, but.
No, she's dressed the same as the other ensemble members, I believe. And they kind of go between the general dance costumes and soldier costumes. And I think at that time she's in one of the dance ensemble costumes.
We got two people who've seen it three times between them. And is there a significance between these people on stage that seem to be formally dressed and the ensemble cast that are in corsets and just like a waistcoat and no shirt underneath? Are they just there to direct our eye away from – are they just there to tell us, look, you don't have to expect this person to be important. They're just part of the chorus. Or is there a significance to the way they're dressed?
I read a very fascinating piece – and I can't remember the exact website that did it. I can look it up after. About the significance of the ensemble costumes. And they are, of course, meant to be sort of a uniform dance mode. But they are also supposed to represent parchment paper, which is in the coloring of their costumes. You know, to represent how Hamilton writes his way out and how much was written. But they also do take on specific roles even within the ensemble. There's one woman who is Hamilton's mother in a number of scenes. There's Ariana, who's the bullet. So they do take focus in moments, like in Stay Alive.
I thought it was interesting that the opening number was played at the Grammys. And of course, I've seen that 100 times now. And I thought it was interesting that Lin-Manuel Miranda changes out of a plain white jacket and into the brown jacket that he seems to start the show in when he leaves his home and goes off to New York. And that seemed to make sense. But what's double interesting to me was that when it came time to be awarded the inevitable Grammy Award, he had changed back into his initial white coat. And I was trying to think about, because he would have had to do that deliberately, of course, to go backstage and make the choice to make that switch. And I don't know whether he was trying to say that, hey, I'm just part of the company, I'm not the star of the show, or whether there was another reason behind it. This is definitely a show where they put so much thought into this that when there's something that seems like a puzzle to you, you kind of want to solve it.
That's a great question. And I don't remember if he goes back into that coat, but he does wear 4, 5, 6, 7 different coats throughout the show. And I think that's part of the reference to him being, I think Jefferson says he dresses like the pits of fashion. He tries to dress himself up. And that's reflected in his costumes throughout the show. He changes a lot.
The website with the great costume description, it's on the tyranny of style. And the one thing costume related, which also ties into the one other thing that I wanted to say, is in the beginning of pre-Charles Lee in Stay Alive, it's really great to see how even in the terrors of war, how Washington and Hamilton are growing closer and thinking as one as they strategize how to get out of this situation. And they're not dressed identically. They each have their Revolutionary War uniforms on, which are similar. Of course, Washington's is more awesome and flashier because he was a snappier dresser. But by that sort of foreshadows one last time where they are truly in sync with the farewell address. And in that moment, they are dressed exactly identically. They both have a black velvet suit on in that moment.
I'm sorry. We've had such a wonderful digression, Marco. I forgot to ask if there's any unfinished business from you before we go back.
My funny favorite part of the song is for some reason when he's saying what Congress writes, he says George as George. And that stands out to me every time.
Foghorn Leghorn. It saddens me that a whole generation of kids do not know who Foghorn Leghorn is. It's up to us to keep that lamp lit. Casey, is there anything that we've got to talk about that you want to address before we end?
That is all.
Ashley, how about you?
I am good.
Excellent. Perfect score. We did perfectly on this one yet again. We are to be commended. Everyone, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. I was, am, and will continue to be, with God's love, Andy Notko. And with us this week time was Scott Canaster. How are you doing, Scott? Thank you for coming.
My pleasure.
Lovely. And Marco Savick.
I'm taking myself out of the narrative.
Casey Barber.
Come visit me at the Battle of Monmouth.
There are scones. Ashley Clark Thompson.
Whee!
You won the $20 Outback Steakhouse gift card, Ashley. That was well done. Well done. Everybody, thank you for listening. This has been Pod for Ham. Have a great ham, all of you.
Don't do a thing. History will prove him wrong.
But sir,
we have a war to fight. Let's move along.
Strong words from Lee. Someone ought to hold him to it.
I can't disobey direct orders.
Then I'll do it. Alexander, you're the closest friend I've got.
Lawrence, do not throw away your shot.